104.7 The Cave. KKLH, Marshfield, Springfield. A proud member of the Kansas City Chiefs Radio Network.
Touchdown, Kansas City!
Now, it's time for Ned Talk.
It is a gorgeous Sunday afternoon. Perfect day to spend some time talking about sports and whatever else we can come up with. I'm Joe Weston, joined as always by Ned Reynolds for Ned Talk. Ned, how are you today?
You're absolutely right, too. It is a beautiful Sunday. Sun is out. It's nice and warm. And we're talking baseball. What more could you know?
Yeah, exactly. John Oliver across from me. John, how are you?
I'm doing well. We got a little bit of a reprieve from the 10 straight days of rain, I think, we're headed for. So
yeah, nice warm weather out there. And it'll probably be muggy by the time all this passes away. Yeah. Ned doesn't care, though.
Perfectly all right.
Me too, Ned. Me too.
Josh Roberts with us. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm also enjoying how beautiful it is outside. I'm going to try to get outside some today. We'll see.
Like that sweat in your undercarriage? Like all that?
Yeah, I love it.
Let's start out with something that we were covering last week as it happened. Albert Pujols was released by the Angels. Of course, huge story for all of us Cardinals people. Yesterday, story broke that it looked like the Cardinals were expressing some interest in him, and then, bang, signs with the Dodgers. Ned, thoughts?
First, when the notice came through, I was surprised and very much in question as to what on earth are the Dodgers doing signing this guy. It's a National League number one, and really feel like he would ever go with the Cardinals. There's just simply limited room for him there. But then, as the NFL officials or the referees, upon further review, a little research shows you that's a classic move by Los Angeles. Several reasons. Number one, here's a team that's the reigning World Series champions, got off to a great start, and now they have dwindled because of injuries. You guys like, you know, Cody Bellinger and Corey Seager and the second baseman, Zach McKinstry. They're coming back. Don't get me wrong. They're not out for the year. Mookie Betts has been playing with a bad back, so their power structure has been greatly diminished. The big one is Max Muncy is the first baseman on this team. He's an all-star, really good player. His backup is a guy named Edwin Rios, who played down here in the Texas League about, I'm going to say, 3 or 4 years ago with the Tulsa Drillers. And I think, if I remember correctly, he set a one-month record for home runs down here. The guy's a big-time power hitter. OUT for the year.
Yep.
He was put on the disabled list for a year yesterday. Has to undergo shoulder surgery. Suddenly, Albert Pujols becomes very attractive because that's what he does, is play first base. Well, the Dodgers apparently have told him, you'll play some. You're mostly going to be on the bench. Depth. All these championship teams have great depth. And the Dodgers' depth has been diminished now with Rios being out of there. You'll play some because Max Muncy can also play second base.
Correct.
Put the two of them in there and have a very big power structure because, after all, Albert's Albert. He can still hit the ball, 667 career home runs. But in my opinion, the biggest selling point of all was the fact that Pujols had his ego stroked a little bit, but he doesn't have to move. He's right there.
That's right.
In Los Angeles for a decade. Doesn't have to worry about moving the family. Anything like that. Money is obviously not a problem. I think it's a classic move by the Dodgers.
I would say another big selling point, too, is obviously the Dodgers will be in contention to repeat this year. So, I mean, that had to be something as Albert Pujols winds down his career. He'd like to add another championship to his resume.
He will also be playing, and I haven't checked the schedule to see if it's 3 or 4, but he'll be playing 1, 3, or 4 against the Cardinals in St. Louis on one trip in there, and that makes a big difference.
Good.
John, what do you think about this move by the Dodgers?
I agree with a lot of what Ned said. You know, on the surface, when I first saw the announcement, I thought, oh, why not an AL team? You know, use the DH. Obviously, the wheels aren't there anymore. He's a proud guy. I think he thinks he has a lot left in the tank, and I'm not one to doubt him, as I've heard a lot of people around Major League Baseball say. Ned brought up a good point. Right now, Seager's out with a broken hand. That's going to be an extensive injury. Bellinger has been out. Muncy has flexibility to play around the infield. Not only can he play second, they've talked about putting him at third. So you've also got Gavin Lux, who's kind of an all-star utility guy, if you will, all-purpose, who can play all of the infield positions. So it gives them a chance right now while they are depleted to let Pujols play a little first and see what happens. And then when these guys are back, Ned hit it on the head. What a nice presence to have off the bench. And especially, you know, if they have any interleague games left, you can put him in the DH spot and see what he can do from there.
John, what do you, or Josh, what's your thoughts?
Well, I, just like these guys, I was kind of surprised at first, but then reading a little bit about it, the other thing that they said was one of the reasons they wanted, or they were looking at Pujols is because the Dodgers have been terrible against left-handed pitchers mm-hmm. this year, and Pujols is a really good hitter against lefties. And so that was an appeal for them as well, is to shore up that part of their game.
Seems like the Dodgers making a lot of moves early. Not only did they get Pujols, they signed a player from the Rays organization as a backup utility player. But as you said, they're going through a lot of injuries right now, mm-hmm. which is something over 162-game season that teams have to deal with. And something I wanted to talk to you about, Ned, last week was the one of the analytics that's going through baseball right now and has hit my team, the Yankees, is this analytic about days off. And I don't know if you know much about it or if you've seen it, but it's kind of interesting that they have broken down the numbers to see where players, how often they get hurt by how many games that they play. Mm-hmm. So they're trying these scheduled day offs, much like they do in the NBA. And it kind of flies in the face of traditional baseball. Do you know, have you seen much about this?
No, I haven't, but I do understand where they're coming from. With a 154-game schedule the way it used to be, you had built-in days off. With mm-hmm. a 162, even though the schedule and season is a little bit longer, early April until early October, you still have a limited number of days off. That midsummer vacation, which the All-Star Game presents, is fine. But every human being, I don't care if you're a big-time athlete or what, does have to have a period, short period of time, the younger you are, to rest and regain the ability, regain the rhythm of life, mm-hmm. so to speak. And I think there's probably a whole lot of credibility to what you read. No, I must admit to you, I haven't read it, but it doesn't surprise me at all.
You're listening to Ned Talk on 104.7 The Cave, your local live sports talk show. John, I don't know if you've studied much about this, but mm-hmm. where it kind of flies in the face of traditional baseball thinking. You got a guy for the Yankees like Giancarlo Stanton who's been extremely hot, has been playing up to the caliber of baseball that they hope to get from him, which I'm quite excited about. But he will have like four good games in a row, and then they'll bench him.
That's the exact example that came to mind. And it's funny you mentioned that. I've heard a lot of rumblings about this scheduled day off thing. And when I was looking at the Yankees box scores, because honestly, I'm that guy. I look at all the box scores yeah. just to kind of see how guys are doing. Stanton's been on an absolute tear. He's hitting close to over 300. He's been driving in runs, hitting a lot of homers. And to see him sit when he's so red hot,
yeah.
that does fly in the face of that. Now, you know, at times you've seen guys get a day off. The Cardinals do this with guys. If they see somebody scuffling, like a Paul DeJong or someone like that, they'll give him a day off just to rest, recollect, come back, and hope he, you know, catches fire. To do that in the middle of when a player is hot, to me, is about the quickest way to probably kill that streak that player has. So I don't like that. I'm fine with days off. I think there are appropriate times during the year because every player is going to slump or have a bad few games. But to do it scheduled to where you're taking away someone who is really on a very, very good streak, it absolutely defies baseball logic to me.
Yeah, it's something that I heard about, and I wanted to get your opinion about it last week, Ned, because, you know, one of the things that we always talk on this show about analytics and sabermetrics that go into baseball. Baseball is probably the most statistically analyzed sport of all of them. And I think there's all of us love baseball for that particular one of the reasons we love it. But then there's overkill with it. And that's where I think all of us kind of fall out with sabermetrics. Let's talk about baseball and what's going on in the world of baseball, because the hottest team in baseball up until the last 2 days has been our own St. Louis Cardinals. Ned, what have they been doing right?
Getting a lot of breaks. This is not meant to be negative at all, because I do think they have a good team. How good they are, I think, remains to be seen. But look at some of the teams they've been beating up on. And another one they're playing this week, the Pittsburgh Pirates. They return to St. Louis. Well, the Cardinals will probably sweep then three straight, should, except that it'll be two straight. They're only playing two games.
Yep.
All right. But they had the Colorado Rockies among the worst teams in baseball, and that built into a stretch in which they could develop some rhythm. They also got some They also got some breaks. The one game that they won 9-8 over the Rockies, Carlos Martinez was horrible in that game. And as a result, I think you're getting a situation in which the stars are aligned right now. I'm going to tell you, I'm telling these guys, folks, I had the opportunity to visit with Mike Shannon last week. And while Mike is now a little bit longer of tooth and maybe has some problems, he still makes a lot of sense. I asked him about that. I said, what's your thought on the Cardinals? And he said, quote, they're walking too many. The pitchers are walking way too many. And it resonated because they did have a game a couple weeks ago where they had 11 walks. They beat that the other night with 12.
Yep.
12 on Friday night in a game in which they got four hits. Which the Padres got four hits, got out hit 8-4, lost the game 5-4. Five runs, four hits, 12 walks.
Yes.
You cannot have that in any stretch of any level of baseball. That doesn't work. So I think part of their fallibility, so to speak, will fall into how accurate their pitchers are, how much of an offensive streak they can get on with Goldschmidt and Arenado. And now DeJong is out. Well, he's on the disabled list for a couple of days. But over and above that, what kind of a rhythm that they can get into? They're a good team, but I don't perceive them as being a great team.
Mm-hmm. They got off to kind of a slow start, but since that slow start, they've had the best record in baseball, 7-3 over the last 10 games. Let's go across the state and talk about the Royals, who got off to a fast start, but are 2-8 over their last games, and are not playing very good baseball.
And they're also playing the tougher teams.
Yes,
Chicago
they are.
White Sox, Cleveland Indians. Mm-hmm. The Minnesota Twins are off to a horrendous start, but they're a very good baseball
team.
Yeah,
they are.
I've looked for the Twins to come back this year. I watched them play. They're a good team.
And see, it's a matter of scheduling and a matter of the level of play that you have facing you, the weaker teams, the good teams. Of course, they're all on the schedule. You all have to beat them. And the Royals have not. The Royals are in a slump. They'll come out of that slump. They won last night. So when you play these teams, and I'll tell you, the Chicago White Sox, La Russa, he has himself a powerhouse.
Yes,
the Cardinals play them next week.
What do you think of the Royals, John?
The Royals got off to a hot start because they had multiple guys. We talked about streaks with the day off conversation earlier. You had a guy named Michael Taylor who came over from the Nationals that finally was starting to play up to the expectations the Nationals had for him when he came up. He was scorching the ball to the tune of about 380, hitting the ball to all fields. He's cooled way down. He's down in the 240s now. Whit Merrifield, as good as a player he is, I'd say he ranks in the top AL hitters overall. He got off to a torrid start in the mid, 340s, somewhere around there. He's down to 279. You're just seeing a lot of their hitters cool off, other than Salvador Perez, who is having a phenomenal offensive season. Just hit, I believe, his 8th or 9th home run yesterday. And then the pitching's come back down to earth. The Royals have a lot of young pitchers.
Yep.
Brady Singer, guys like that have performed well, but they're going to hit rough patches. The Detroit Tigers are in the same situation with their starters. They don't have the veteran presence there, and these guys aren't established. So the Royals, while they've got the potential and they showed it early in the season, they're going to go through rough patches like this. And Ned brought it up too, playing these upper echelon teams in the American League are going to, force a few losses for them.
Josh, what are your thoughts early on in the baseball season?
It's interesting. It seems to me like there's a lot of parity right now. Mm-hmm. You're seeing teams that they'll have a good run of 10 games and then they'll have a bad run of 10 games. I feel like what we talked about before about players swinging for the fences is still part of the issue there.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, going back kind of to what we were talking about earlier, it's easy. Baseball is overanalyzed and baseball is overstatistized. They try to put too many statistics on it. Baseball, more than any other professional sport, is about half sorcery and half science.
Yes.
And so, because think about it, we talked about that a couple weeks ago too, about all the superstition and all of that stuff that really does the psychology of baseball. No other sport has that, in my opinion. And so I think that's part of the problem is when you the sabermetrics and all the analytics and everything try to turn baseball into a widget, and you can't because it's magic.
We're going to talk about that a little bit later on the show, sports superstition. That'll be our roundtable discussion. But we're continuing to talk about baseball right now. The hottest team, or the, I won't say they're the hottest, but they have the best record in baseball, the Boston Red Sox. And Ned, you and I talked about this last week or a couple of weeks ago, that when I saw the lineup for the Red Sox, I was like, who? Who's that? Who's I've never heard of any of these guys. They're doing it kind of quietly this year.
They are coming
on. They don't have a lot of big-name players.
Got off to a really slow start at the very, very beginning of the season. But Boston's a good team and a good organization. They can come on. They can make a lot of noise. The problem for them is they're in the same division with the Yankees and the Tampa Bay Rays, and that's going to create a bit of difficulty for them. But the fact is that if they can continue to play well, they can certainly be a championship contender down the stretch. The team that puzzles me, if they can ever find a home, is Toronto. Toronto has some weapons on their team, but those poor guys, some of their games are in Dunedin, Florida. The others are in Buffalo, New York. Yeah.
And they're playing well.
They're playing fantastic.
They are playing well.
They're a good baseball team.
Just it?
Yes.
Although the Phillies took care of them the other night.
That's right. They did. They absolutely did.
Yeah, I'm sitting here going through the records, John, and nothing stands out to me. I mean, the teams that are at the top are pretty bunched together with very similar records, 23 wins, about 16 losses. The only one that's really kind of unusual is the Mets, because they played about seven fewer games than the rest of the teams in the division. And the other part of it is, when you look at the teams that are at the bottom, it's really not that there's nobody you go, well, I think the team that shocks me the most is the Twins at 13 and 24, because I've watched them play. That's a good team.
The reason the Mets have the lesser games is that right at the very start of the season, they played the Washington Nationals, and those games were COVIDed, if you can make a verb out of it.
Yep. Yes.
COVIDed out. They'll make them up. It'll all equal.
Yeah. But what are your thoughts? I mean, we've talked about the parity in baseball. Anything you're seeing that's...
There's a couple of things that are contributing this to me. Number one, you've got to remember they didn't get in a full season last year. These guys, it was a lot more strenuous offseason to get back up to speed, and I don't think a lot of guys are back up to speed. One of the things you can see, you know, you mentioned the records, and I feel like part of that lends to the parity. The concerning part is, to me, you see a lot of guys that are still in the starting lineup, and this is on every single team, that are batting 170 at this point. We are almost just about a third into the season. Normally, you would see those guys either benched, demoted, but with the lack of options for, you know, the off-site, if you will, minor league baseball's finally coming back in and just started, you're seeing a lot of very terrible sub-50 points Mendoza line, you know, box scores for these guys. And to me, that's concerning, because, you know, we mentioned about how, you know, everybody's concerned with exit velocity and launch angles. I think that's contributing to it as well. And I'm hoping that once hitters kind of hit their groove overall this year, you'll start to see those averages creep up, and you'll see some of the perennial guys that do well start to kind of even out.
You know, John, what you talked about with the algorithms and so forth and so on is contributing to some bad psychology.
Yes, it
is. These people are taking a bad approach to the game. Mm-hmm. Coaches are not able to correct that. I'll tell you one who surprises the daylights out of me. He was a cover boy even before baseball started, Francisco Lindor of the New York Mets. He's off to a horrible start, and he's a kid. Well, part of it is the going for the long ball and things like that. And, of course, we've discussed at length our friend Mr. Carpenter up with the St. Louis Cardinals, who is as we approach today's game, I think 1-12, somewhere around there, 1-1-2. And
he does have an ERA of 0, though, Ned. So.
He does have that.
I'm surprised. There's about 23 guys hitting over 500, hitting over 300 this year. Sorry if I can spit that out. And the guy that's leading all of baseball right now is a catcher with the Chicago White Sox.
That's right.
You remember Mercedes? Yep. Is that how you say it?
Mercedes.
Jermaine Mercedes.
He's a 28-year-old guy that came out of Mexico. I had no expectations for this guy. When I looked at the preseason rosters, I said, who? He has been consistently unbelievable to this point.
Yeah, but keep in mind, one of the reasons is they don't know how to pitch to him.
Right.
He's a newcomer into the American League. La Russa's probably saying, Keep doing it, son. Keep doing it and all that. He'll cool off. They'll catch up.
Xander Bogaerts is having a good season at shortstop for the Red Sox. Part of the reason why for their success, along with J.D. Martinez, they're both having outstanding years. Yes, 354 and 345. Mike Trout, always 336, is up there. Let me ask all you guys this before we go into the commercial breaks. Are you tired? I'm personally tired of hearing of Ohtani, the pitcher player. I mean, I don't. That seems to be a really propped up guy. What's your thoughts on all that?
No. He is the real deal. For one thing, he's big. He's a tall, angular guy who can pitch. Can he pitch on a regular basis in the major leagues and still play? Probably not, because this is a whole lot more demanding than it is in Japan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But given all of his statistics and all of what he does on a regular basis with the bat and the ball, this guy's unique. And no, I'm not tired of hearing him at all. He is, in my opinion, a breath of fresh air to baseball. Here's a guy who is a multi-talented player and can get it done.
Yeah, as far as Ohtani's concerned, Joe, I can see where you're coming from, but I've kind of watched his career trajectory up to this point, and he came on like a house of fire his rookie year. Then he got hurt and literally was dismissed as a flop. He's finally healthy. The guy can plain hit. He is going to be a phenomenal big league hitter in his career. Ned mentioned the pitching is suspect. I don't think he can keep it up. He has special outings. But I think that's more of kind of a Swiss Army knife right now for the Angels. I think eventually he'll be a full-time outfielder, and he will have a very good offensive career in the major leagues.
I think there's a health issue there. Really, I do. Yeah. I think you're going to see more of it, and bigger guys have that health issue. I mean, you're seeing it with the Yankees, with Judge and Judge. Stan. Yeah. But they're both having a good year. I was continuing to scroll down the guys that were below 300 batting averages, but there's some good averages in there too. I'd just like to see a little more of that. I'd like to see a little more 300 hitting in Major League Baseball. When we come back, we'll discuss what is going on in the world of the Missouri State Bears, because they got a rather significant move, and we'll talk to Ned about what he thinks about college transfers. It's all coming up next on Ned Talk.
You're listening to Ned Talk on 104.7 The Cave, part of the Kansas City Chiefs Radio Network. Back to Ned Talk on 104.7 The Cave. A proud member of the Kansas City Chiefs Radio Network.
Yes, sir, Ned Talk. Chatting about sports on a Sunday afternoon, a beautiful Sunday afternoon. Hopefully you got us on out in the garage while you're doing something. Maybe riding around on the mower. Look at these guys know what they're talking about. We talked about baseball. Let's talk about football for a little bit. Big get for the Missouri State Bears. We'll let John take the lead on that.
Yeah,
his father.
Interesting story that came through the ticker a few days ago. Tariq Owens, who is the son of course, now Hall of Fame wide receiver Terrell Owens, a young man that played at a college I hadn't heard of and then played for Florida Atlantic University, which is in a decent conference. They're a decent school. I believe that's the one Lane Kiffin coaches, correct? Yeah.
That's how you know they're not decent.
So he has transferred to Missouri State. He's 6'3", 180. You know, everything looks good from a physique perspective. It'll be interesting to see how they utilize him. And, you know, he's either going to be a big weapon or he'll he'll probably eat most of the team buffet. We'll see what happens.
Interesting move, and this is part of the larger conversation we want to get into about college transfers. And Ned, as always, has formed a well-thought-out opinion about those things, and I want to talk to him about it.
Many of them are good. There's no question about that, and many of them are done for legitimate reasons. But there are also far more that are done for reasons that have to be looked at with a shade of skepticism. And that is that the grass is going to be, oh, my goodness, I can go over here and everybody's going to love me and all that sort of thing. It doesn't work that way. And I'm afraid a lot of these kids are thinking from the Pollyanna standpoint that everything is going to be just great and you're going to be an All-America at the new locale. I don't know the Owens kid. You saw his father play, of course, forever and ever. But this is an interesting move on his part because he's leaving a 1A school, and they call it FBS. It is a lot of BS. 1A for a 1AA. Now, a good 1AA team, I think the Bears are going to be pretty good, but why is he leaving? Why is he coming up here, leaving Boca Raton for Springfield, Missouri? Springfield, Missouri in November and October. Well, October, November, December in the winter ain't Boca Raton, folks. But I just had some skepticism about all these kids who are suddenly leaving, going into the portal transfer, or transfer portal, I guess is what it's called, and making themselves available. I just do not have a lot of confidence in some of the kids who are going elsewhere.
Do you think a lot of it is because they feel like they're not getting the playing time they want, and so that's that grass is greener on the other side mentality? Like, here's a school who says, hey, you're going to get more playing time if you transfer to us. And then my question is, how much interaction do these schools get to have with these players to convince them to transfer? Is that
number two? The answer is limited. Number one, why are they? Because they're spoiled little blankety blank who've never had their blankety blank kicked.
Yep.
And well, for you know, like for Jalen Hurts, it made sense for him to transfer to Oklahoma because once Tua came on, Jalen knew that he wasn't going to be the starter at Alabama, and he was still a really good quarterback. But I kind of agree with you. I think a lot of it is they get their feelings hurt that they don't catch enough passes or don't get enough carries or whatever. And so they see another opportunity where they feel like they're going to get more playing time. How long has this transfer portal been in place?
This is only the second year for it. And it's going to be on a limited basis because it hasn't been totally okayed yet. It is for this year. It's fine this year. And keep in mind, the transfer portal, when you transfer to a school, you can do so without having to sit out. Mm-hmm. That is for 1 year.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you do it again, you're sitting, you're behind on the bench, and eventually you're going to use up your eligibility. Mm-hmm. I just have a lot of skepticism about the whole thing.
Yeah.
He played at Contra Costa College.
That's the college.
I'm having to think, Joe, that that's a JUCO.
Yeah. Seven games, 15 catches as a freshman. In his debut, he caught 3 passes for 90 yards and had a touchdown in each of his last 2 games. But we know, too, that just because your father or mother or, you know, somebody you related to was a professional athlete doesn't always translate. I mean, you look at Michael Jordan's sons, neither one of them, you know, they played a little bit of college basketball.
Pete Rose Jr.
And that's not knocking those. That's not knocking those individuals, because it's to be at a certain level of athletics, it takes a certain type of mindset to get there. And oftentimes you find that the children of athletes, they don't have that same hunger. They don't have that same drive.
Mm-hmm. Case in point, Joe, there are many champions, many champion athletes whose offspring have not even chosen to be in athletics.
Absolutely.
I'll give you a classic example of one. Joe Louis, the great heavyweight mm-hmm. champion, his real name was Joe Louis Barrow, and they shortened it to Joe Louis. His son, who is still living, is a most accomplished attorney.
Yes.
And a representative or an agent, so to speak, for some athletes. But the fact is that he never pursued athletics at all. Mm-hmm. It didn't hit him in the same desire. Just because you come from that bloodline does not necessarily mean you're going to be a star.
And you find, too, a lot of athletes don't want their children to go down mm-hmm. that route mm-hmm. because they just don't want to put them through the same things that they had to go through to get to the level that they want to go to. But it's a nice get for the Missouri State Bears, because this Absolutely. Is a guy who, you know, it doesn't appear that he's a top blue chip prospect, as they refer to in athletics. But still, because of his father, he has a name, and he's coming to Missouri State, and he probably would not have even been on the board for Missouri State over the last 3 or 4 years until Coach Petrino comes here, and right. and the team makes some noise.
Well, there's no question that Coach Petrino's presence has indeed improved the whole scope of things for Missouri State. And case in point, their 5-1 comeback again.
Yep,
they didn't play the toughest of teams, but they were there, and you can't deny that. I think this fall schedule that the Bears play under Coach Petrino is really going to be interesting to see how much they've really turned it around, because they'll play the full 11-game schedule and then hopefully more after that, but the full 11-game schedule, and then see what happens. Incidentally, while I think about it, where are we here, 12:30, coming up in just a short time is the FCS National Championship game. And again, the Missouri Valley Conference team, South Dakota State, who the Bears did not play this year, against Sam Houston State. That'll be a very, very good football game.
Where can people watch that game?
I think it's on, if I'm not mistaken, ABC. I think have it on national television.
Really? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's weird to talk this late May about football.
Yeah. And hopefully it'll never happen again.
Right.
Well, unless we're talking about some startup football league. No. I love talking about startup football. I love startup football leagues.
They're all my favorite. About the startup
football. Oh, I love them. I think they're great. I love those startup leagues.
For this year had a level of credibility because we knew it was going to happen and because of a pandemic. But in terms of a new league starting up, I personally can't get excited about it.
Oh, I do. I think it's just great. The team names and just the excitement that goes around it. The cities. I love it. That's just me. Let's talk about the Kansas City Chiefs, though. Things are a little bit quiet in the world of NFL football. I mean, the schedule did come out this week, and we'll talk about that in a second. But they did make a trade. They got Mike Hughes from the Vikings to help shore up the backfield, the defensive backfield. What do you know about Mike Hughes?
I know nothing about him other than the fact that he played for the Vikings and the Chiefs, of course. Well, any team is going to do this, not necessarily just the Chiefs, but they ballyhoo the fact that we're picking up this guy from the Vikings and going to be a big help. Well, they wouldn't have gotten him if they didn't think he was going to be a big help, of course. Let's see how they play on the field. It does lend me to believe that maybe there is some doubt that some of these other players who are back there, I'm not going to pinpoint anybody, but they do have some older players, may not be fitting the bill, Breshad Breeland and people of that caliber. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to name any names, but...
Go ahead.
Still, the fact is that they could use some help back there. So this will be depth, if nothing else.
He's a first-round draft pick from the Vikings. He was number 30th overall in 2018. Breshad Breeland is a free agent and unsigned. And he goes along also with DeAndre Baker, who was a former first-round draft pick from the New York Giants that the Chiefs have signed. He had a broken leg and missed the final regular season game last season, DeAndre Baker did. Interesting, though, because we were talking off air before we went into this segment about how the Chiefs really, really fixed, or at least on paper, fixed the issues that they had. Their secondary got some depth there. We don't know until you see these guys play. And then, of course, the offensive line got some depth there. So kind of exciting. But as you said, you don't know. They have to play the games. They don't play them on paper.
And in the National Football League, your rate of attrition, physical rate of attrition, is so much a factor in how a team's going to end up. And that's an intangible. You can't predict that going to happen.
Nope. We're going to talk about luck and superstition. It's our roundtable talk. It's coming up next on Ned Talk.
You're listening to Ned Talk on 104.7 The Cave, part of the Kansas City Chiefs Radio Network. Back to Ned Talk on 104.7 The Cave. A proud member of the Kansas City Chiefs Radio Network.
We try to dedicate this portion of the show to sort of a roundtable discussion, something that may be on topic or off topic. And today it's superstition, because we've talked a lot over the last couple of weeks about superstition. And I was curious, Ned, before you went on, did you eat chicken every night?
Well, I eat chicken often, but it has nothing to do with superstition.
You're not a Wade Boggs guy? You didn't sit and eat chicken every night before you went on the air just for luck? Did you have anything superstitious you did before you went on air?
When I was a kid, yes. And listen, now keep in mind, we didn't watch baseball games back then. We listened to them. That was the only way you covered the Phillies, or the Philadelphia A's, back when I was a kid growing up. The Phillies, and I was an avowed Phillies fan. They had this little litany that they'd go through in the seventh inning. All right, seventh inning, gang, stand up, tug on your cap, rub your noses, cross your fingers, and grab a good old bottle of Budweiser beer. Anyway, that part of it had to be left out. But standing up and rubbing your nose, did all that all the time, and it never worked.
What about you, John? Were you superstitious at all when you played?
Huge. huge. Yeah. And, still to this day, I have certain super. Anybody that's played sports that I know, you know, you had, like, your lucky socks if you had a good game, that sort of thing. One thing I'll share, baseball-related, the best superstition story I've ever heard is Mookie Wilson, who was, of course, a Mets, you know, pretty good Mets
pond
player.
Scum. Yeah,
pond scum, if you will. They had an article, and they asked different players, you know, what do you do to get out of a slump? And he said, well, I just think to myself that I believe in dinosaurs, because if I believe in them, then maybe they'll believe in me.
That was his answer?
That's his quote.
That is awesome.
If I believe in them, then maybe, and I get out of a slump that way? Mookie, where are you, man?
That's just a great philosophy to live your life by. Right. Just remember that when you get up in the morning and the day is not going so well. Believe in dinosaurs, because maybe they'll believe in you.
They believe in the fright.
What about you, Josh?
Well, I was never good enough at baseball to develop any
Did you have any football superstitions?
I had my favorite pair of shoes that I would wear up to, you know, the locker room before every game. And I'm sure I had a pair of socks that just reeked because I wore them all the time.
Was there, because you guys played at Glendale, was there anything at Glendale that, like, everybody did? You know, you'll see these football games where they touch the sign or they touch
it. At Glendale, there's a plaque coming out of the locker room that says, play like champions today, and everybody would slap that as you go out on the field.
Baseball's huge with superstitions.
Didn't say everybody.
Everybody.
Better be out there running. Yeah. They didn't say that. No,
it didn't.
There is a very famous story from the 1951 New York Giants when they came from 13 and a half games down in August and overhauled the Dodgers and forced them into a playoff. So during that streak, they won, I think it was 17 or 18 straight games. The great Bobby Thompson did not change his clothes in that time period.
Oh, my Lord.
I'm not going to change them as long as we win. Well, I got a little on the ripe side. Let's put it that way.
Would that make that the shot that was smelled around the world?
Very good shot.
I was so superstitious when I played baseball. I played in the time when you actually had the separate stirrup socks.
Oh, stirrups, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I got a hit in a game, and for some reason my shirt was untucked and my stirrups were hanging out. I didn't have them in my shoes. So I played the rest of the season with my shirt hanging out and my stirrups hanging out and drove my parents absolutely crazy because I was the sloppiest looking kid on the baseball field because of that.
What was your average that year, though?
I hit 400 that year.
Nice.
Yeah.
It worked. Superstitions have always permeated sports. And, you know, the best example I can think of in pop culture is if you watch the movie The Natural, you know, the bat, you know. Oh, yeah. That Robert Redford has. I mean, everybody remembers that moment. And, you know, the bat breaks. Oh, no, what does he do? You know, and in recent memory, Tiger Woods with the red victory shirts. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's always superstition, I think, in almost every sport.
Most wacko of all, Mark the Bird Fidrich.
Oh, yeah.
This guy was utterly wacko. Getting down on his knees, dusting off the rubber with his hand, and then going over and kissing the baseline and all sorts of foolish, and of course, part of it was a show because the guy's a little bit off center. But these were all superstitions that he went through. A lot of them, and you'll see this mostly with pitchers, when they leave, they will not touch that baseline.
Absolutely.
I was one of my superstitions.
I jumped over it.
Yeah, I would. Nope. Sparky Anderson was the first guy I saw do that, and he was like, you know, why? We don't, you know, you don't want to break the line.
Yep.
You know, Mark Fidrich, really interesting guy, because there's guys that come along in I think every sport that electrify it for maybe just a moment. Mm-hmm. And he was one of those guys. I mean, when he pitched, everybody stopped and watched him, you know, the antics. But also, in that first season that he pitched, he was electric.
Yes, he was.
Just a phenomenal pitcher. And then such a sad end to his life, too, because he was a farmer, and then his tractor fell on top of him, and there was nobody around to be able to get to him. So, I mean, he basically knew he was going to pass
away.
That's
exactly what happened. He was working on it underneath that slipped off the jack, I think is what it was.
Exactly what happened.
And he could not, I think they got him out alive, but he was far too damaged to live.
Who was the guy? I'm trying to think of the guy that pitched for the Dodgers from one of the first Japanese players. No, it's not Japanese, but he came over from Mexico.
Oh, Fernando Valenzuela.
Yeah, Valenzuela was the same
Nando.
Way. Just electric when you had to watch him. And then the career never lives up to the early hype.
Yeah.
And especially pitchers because of the injury factor that pitchers go through.
Have you ever tried to breathe through your eyelids, Joe? Because that's what Fernando touted, and it didn't work for me.
Fernando's still around, guys. He's still coaching and teaching baseball, mostly in Mexico. But, yeah, he had a pretty good career.
He did.
So there's
Yeah, but not living up to that, you know, the electric moments early on in the career. Another guy I think of is Louis Tiant.
Oh,
when
yeah.
he would turn and look turn at second and, base yeah. and then throw a pitch. Well,
that was his style more than it was.
A show.
As far as superstition's concerned, you guys are going to help me out. The Cardinals second baseman who every blasted pitch when he was at bat, every pitch, step out and tighten his gloves and all that.
I remember Garcia Parra doing that.
Yeah, no more Garcia Parra. That was too.
Oh, late. Skip Schumacher. Schumacher had a whole routine.
Lord almighty. You talk about a delay and long games. I mean, every pitch. And he's out and tightens them up and so forth and so on.
I think Nomar was the worst with that, though. It was annoying because he'd step out of the box and he's messing with his gloves all the time.
Baseball's the sport that's filled with the most of those. I mean, I think he coaches the Knicks now. Had that thing that he would wipe his forehead. That was a symbol to his kids.
Oh, yes.
What's his name? Jeff...
Van Gundy, I believe.
No, not Van Gundy. It's he played for the Phoenix Suns. It's not.
Hornacek? Jeff Hornacek?
Yeah, Hornacek.
Jeff Hornacek.
He wiped before every free throw. He wiped his brow so that it was just a message to his kids. You see, kickers do that silly thing where they go out there and they do the line with their hand. They do the line with their hand. Like, what's that? What's that supposed to do?
Well, what about rally caps? I mean, you talk about baseball superstition.
I love baseball's the most. I mean,
baseball does have the most.
Can you think of any in the other sports that you really
playoff beards in hockey?
Yeah. Playoff beards are a huge one.
Yeah, you're about to see that because the hockey playoffs are about to start. None of those guys are going to shave until they're out of the playoffs. So the Stanley Cup's going to be a bunch of bearded warriors.
You're talking about the gestures to the crowd as being superstitious. Gary Templeton had a great gesture to the crowd.
That wasn't superstitious. that was pointed, Ned.
There was a great article written about Gary Templeton. And there used to be a magazine called Baseball Magazine. And there was an article written about him called Funny Thing Happened to Gary Templeton on the Way to the Hall of Fame.
Because
he could have been a Hall of Fame baseball player. And that was such an electric trade. When they traded Templeton to the Padres for Ozzie Smith.
Mm-hmm. Can I plug a book real quick since
we're
on this topic?
Yeah.
I don't have any interest in this, obviously, so this isn't a pay situation. But there is a book out there, if you're a baseball fan, called The Wax Pack. And if you have a chance to pick it up and read it, I would highly recommend it if you were a baseball fan in the late 70s or early 80s. It's a gentleman that grew up a baseball fan, you know, was obsessed with it, much like you and I, Ned and Joe. He started collecting cards in 1986. And so later on, he became a journalist. And so he bought a pack of 1986 Topps cards. There were 15 cards in the pack. And his mission was whoever the 15 guys were he got out of the pack, he would go find them, interview them, and talk to them about their time in baseball.
Wow.
Templeton came out of that pack. Vince Coleman came out of that pack.
Uh-huh.
Carlton Fisk. Steve Yeager. Was in that pack. Just a litany of guys, and it's amazing the stories he has because he just did it all by car, rode around the country, took a summer and did it, and it's fascinating the facts he got to come out of these former players.
Gary Templeton. Only here on Ned Talk do you hear a name like Gary Templeton come up. We'll wrap up the show in just a minute. Ned Talk on 104.7 The Cave.
Back to Ned Talk on 104.7 The Cave, a proud member of the Kansas City Chiefs Radio Network.
Yes, we are doing Ned Talk. We're at the end of the show where we talk about we're going to watch on TV this afternoon. I want to do some housekeeping. Mitch Holthus will be coming this summer. Ned, what is the date for that? Do you know?
July the 22nd.
July 22nd. It'll be at the Riff, which we've had it there for the last couple of years. That is at the corner of Sunset and Kansas Expressway. It is there's a filling station right there at the corner, and it's with Classic Rock Coffee, and that's where we'll be. And if you haven't been to one of these, it's a lot of fun because Mitch Holthus knows more about the Chiefs than probably anybody else, short of people in the front office and Andy Reid. But we'll be excited to have that once again. It is a really, really good night. Mitch is a great speaker, and we're always proud to have Ned as part of that, too, because Ned is a fantastic MC for those events. And they have great camaraderie and answer some questions and tell us about what's going on in the world of the Kansas City Chiefs. And tickets for that are available, I believe, right now. Are they on sale?
I think
now?
They probably are going on sale, but don't hold me to that. I will tell you, though, as opposed to a speech, what we do is interview Mitch.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you guys, Art Haynes and I do the interview. He doesn't know ahead of time what we're going to ask. Yeah. There is nothing that he cannot answer in terms of Kansas City, and they're all free-flowing answers. There are no ums and hems and haws and so forth and so on. He is a very good interviewee.
Yes, he is.
So we can't wait for that to happen. Also, I want to remind you that the home for the St. Louis Cardinals, St. Louis Cardinals is on our sister station, 105.1 The Bull. So you can listen to the games there if you like. And I wanted to bring up one more superstition. When I'm watching the games, I will wear my Yankee jersey and I will touch the NY.
Oh, nice.
And I will touch my hat and I will say, do something good. Do something good.
Hey, that's great.
That's my superstition. It generally doesn't work anymore, but it doesn't work. So,
Ned, in the magic.
What are you going to watch this afternoon?
Well, if I do watch, it'll probably be the FCS championship game, the 1AA championship game. On my home system that I have, I don't see the Cardinals. They're not listed. That gives you an idea of what kind of a system I have. It's a streaming
same
system.
Same one as me.
Right.
And so I can't see them except tonight. Mm-hmm. And the Sunday night game is on. That is part of my system. So I'll watch probably a little bit of the Cardinals and the Padres tonight. And hopefully the Redbirds will have a less margin than 13-3 that they lost by last night. Gracious.
John, what about you? What's on your schedule for the evening,
the
day?
Like Ned, I'll be watching the Cardinals tonight. The game was free on Fox Sports 1 last night, and I turned off a free game, Ned. I couldn't handle it anymore.
It was free?
It was free, yeah, and it was...
No, I didn't miss it.
It was vulgar, if you want to call a baseball game that. I'll just rest during the day and, yeah, watch the Cards tonight and see what they can do.
What about you, Josh? Soccer on? Cricket? Something?
No, soccer's over at this point for the day. That season's almost over, too. They only have one more game.
This season never ends. Come on.
Well, yeah. They still have Champions League stuff later, but the actual Premier League only has one game left, and Manchester City's already clinched it, so...
You're not going to watch football, John? Or, I'm sorry, basketball? You're not, because you're our basketball fan.
Not today. Yeah, I watch it. I get excited some days and watch it. Right now,
but there's a lot on the line for these teams today.
I'm
suffering from Lakers burnout about the sixth seed.
Are there any other teams?
Not that I know of.
Boy, that's all the media ever talks about. The Lakers this and the Lakers that.
Steph Curry's had an amazing end of the season.
Oh, my God.
You're right.
Just amazing.
Joe, while I think about it, there is no show next week. Is that right?
Yeah, no show next week. We were taking the week off because our namesake, Ned Reynolds, will be doing the Springfield Cardinals game. And by the way, does a fantastic job. He and Scott Bales do a phenomenal job with those games.
Yep. Thank you. That's very nice. We enjoy doing them. And I hope when we go on next week, they will have more than one win.
Yes.
Yes, hopefully.
So, and I'm sorry I interrupted Josh. And
you're fine. I may check out the division.
FCS to
The FCS. That'd be a good football game to watch.
You know, I'm just having fun watching baseball, period. Turn on games. I have a TV in my office at work, which may have been a huge mistake on the owner's parts. But I turn it on and I watch whoever I watch. And I find that I'm really enjoying it more than I have for a lot of years. John knows this. I coach baseball. And, man, that'll suck the baseball out of you pretty quickly. It's coaching it with the kids. You kind of get over it pretty fast. Well, Ned, have a good game next week, and we will be watching and listening to you.
In 2 weeks.
I'm telling you, next week you have a game.
Our next show will be in 2 weeks, though.
Yes, our next show will be in 2 weeks, but I'm talking about next week when you do the game.
Thank you.
We will be watching.
Right.
So until then, we will see you guys. I want to say thanks to Mike the intern, Corbin Campbell, Scott Meyer, and everybody else who brings you this fantastic show. If you're just tuning in and thinking, gosh, I'm missing it, well, you can download it as a podcast through our website, wherever you get your podcast at, or you can listen to it on the Cave app. It's Ned Talk. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.